I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Welcome to The Poisoner's Cabinet. I'm Sinead.
And I'm Nick.
And this is your weekly podcast exploring the lives of the great poisoners, macabre murders and captivating crimes from across the centuries, and creating curious cocktails inspired by the tales that we tell. And it's episode 174.
Yes,
it is. It is. We're absolutely raring to go.
I won't go that far.
That's
knocking down a peg or two, I think.
Well, we've had a warm-up round.
Yes, and that was a disaster.
Let's be honest with our listeners.
Couldn't get much worse.
It wasn't that bad. No, it was.
It was. Yeah.
We'll level with you people. You know, when you do a podcast for this long, sometimes you start recording and you go, no, that was no good. Come on. We do better. Let's do it again.
Get in the zone.
And we're feeling it now. But the first time around, often I go, no, there was some gold in there. And even that time I was like, oh, fuck, no.
That's dreadful.
People do not want to hear this. They have lives and they have hard jobs. They don't need to listen to that rubbish. Yeah. But now you've got the gold, people.
Absolutely. We're there. We're on it.
Yep. How are you, Nick?
Oh, I'm all right.
You're all right.
I'm all right. I'm not looking forward to an early start tomorrow.
Oh, you do have to go to the Midlands.
I've got to go to Birmingham, which is a long way away. I don't want to go to Birmingham because it's a long way away.
Why do you have to go to Birmingham?
Oh, a very exciting conference. I'm the sort of person who goes to conferences and I hate myself for it.
No, but conferences could be so exciting.
No,
but you don't
really
get an overnight.
Can't. But yeah, exactly. I've got to go there and back in a day.
Yeah, that's not fun.
Picked up at 5:30 in the morning.
5:30? Why?
To get to Birmingham.
Fair enough.
So yeah, it's going to be a long day full of boring people.
I hope none of them listen to this podcast.
I find it very unlikely.
Someone's driving up there so excited to meet you, and then they hear your voice and they're just cut deep.
Yeah. It's one of those conferences where a large portion of it is given over to the thing I hate most in this world.
Is it networking?
It's networking.
Oh, God, no, Nick. You're so bad at networking.
I absolutely hate it. It's the most pointless activity ever created. It's horrendous. And when you hate people at the best of times, it's even more difficult.
Pray for Nick this week, people. Send thoughts and prayers. Could you light some candles outside your house? And just in the arms of the angels.
Yeah, so it's not looking good so far. It's not looking good.
I pity the people who have to network with you. The people who rock up big smiles and their business cards right out there.
Yeah, I kind of fuck off.
You know what's good, though?
What?
It's spooky season.
It is.
Woo-hoo!
Can I network in a spooky way?
I strongly urge you to do that.
In fancy dress?
Yes. Oh my God, yes. What would you go as?
I don't know. Go as a vampire or a werewolf.
Fully furry. Go as a sexy vampire.
Sexy vampire.
Just there with a big old cape, like a Dracula's cape.
And nothing on the other side.
When anyone gives you a business card, you give them a tiny pumpkin. They won't forget you.
No, this is true. Tiny pumpkins have got my business details embroidered.
Embroidered. Oh, wow. I was just going to go with just a big fat magic marker where you've just written Nick.
I think that's the difference between you and I. I have standards.
You have standards. You hate these people.
Yeah, but no, if I'm going to hate them, I'm going to hate them properly.
Oh, you're going to do it with style to say, by the way, you can never match this.
Exactly, yeah.
Whereas I'm just clinging on, like, going, please like me. There's not even my details on the tiny pumpkins.
No, you're just throwing pumpkins at people.
It's just a picture of my face that I've drawn badly. Well, any poisonings this week?
Very possibly tomorrow, depending how the networking goes.
Good. This sounds like a fun networking.
Yeah, it could be me, to be honest.
Watch out for it on the news, people. You poison yourself with too much caffeine to get you through, and then you get the shakes.
I'm going to take a hip floss to a work conference.
I think it'd be more fun if you just have a tiny, tiny bit of booze.
Yeah.
Yeah, just get that'll liven
get
things
a
up.
Lunchtime Negroni, I wonder.
I think you can. You can make one and bring one. What's going to stop people?
This is true.
Okay. I like it. Yeah. I don't think I poisoned it. Or may I poison myself with the very strong antihistamine I took just before this podcast so I don't sneeze all the way through it. So it's either sneezing or me getting high. And I think we all know what we want there.
Yeah. Do we? Do we really?
I'll make it fun, Nick. Don't you worry.
Oh, good.
Yay. Well, speaking of getting high on podcasts and throwing tiny pumpkins at people to make an impression, I think it is time for us to thank our delicious Patreon subscribers.
Oh, we probably should say thank you very much to Philip Norris.
To Vicky Zimmer.
To Susan L.
And to Laura McPherson.
Hurrah!
Thank you, very sexy Patreon subscribers. You're lovely. We had fun on Patreon this week.
Oh, we did?
Did a bang up to date, almost. Poisoning
bang
case.
Bang up to date almost from 50 years ago.
I don't say that the 70s were 50 years ago.
It's frightening when you think of it like that.
Don't say that.
They
don't
were actually
say that.
Only 5 years ago. But now they were 50 years ago.
50 years ago. So yeah. Bang up to date.
Absolutely. Because you're still in your teens.
I may not look it, but I feel it in my heart. It's how old you feel. No, I can't even get to that sentence.
Just lies.
That's an awful, awful thing that awful people say. But anyway, if you want to know what the hell we're talking about, we do have a wonderful Patreon channel if you feel like supporting the Poisonous Cabinet even further. We do extra weekly episodes. We have extra bonus content. We just put out our latest episode of the Case Files of PC Morris for our cyanide connoisseurs, which was a lot of fun. We had a lot of laughs.
Proving, as we always do.
Indeed. Proving I can't... Well, I can do maths, but not where houses of cards are figured.
Yes, that was not your finest moment.
No, it wasn't my finest moment of trying to work out where the biggest house of cards could be.
Yes, it was not impressive.
You know what?
Actually quite sad.
I challenge people to rise to the occasion. But yes, if you would like to support us further, you can find us on patreon.com/thepoisonouscabinet. Well, Nick, are you ready?
Oh, God, yes.
To drink cocktails and talk about poison?
Let's do it!
Don't worry, we can drink poison and talk about cocktails!
Let's do that too!
Okay, I think we should go with the first one.
Okay.
Okay, everyone take a breath. Hooray, hooray, hooray. It is Nick's story this week, and we can't possibly have a story without a cocktail in hand. As you know, dear listeners, every week we choose a secret ingredient that is inspired by the tale that we tell, and it will flavour our cocktail of the week. So, Nick, your story, your pick of the ingredient.
Yes.
And it is...
It's a bank.
A bank.
A bank.
A British bank is run with precision. Okay, a bank.
Yeah.
Not often an ingredient you'll find.
No, this is true.
But I like it.
Yeah, I'm glad.
So I'm thinking it's all about pirates.
It's very much so.
Like last week, yes, was disappointing because the grog had no pirates in it whatsoever. This bank run entirely by pirates.
Entirely by pirates.
Oh, okay.
Oh, do you remember that? You reminded me of something now.
Okay.
There's a beginning of, I think it might be the beginning of Meaning of Life. There's a little Monty Python short sketch.
Yes, yes.
Where there's a load of... Are they the insurance or bankers?
They're the insurance ones.
Yes, so they're sitting in an office and they become pirates, filing cabinets.
Yes, they
outside
do.
Outside of... Yeah, I like that greatly.
People are not wearing enough hats.
Yes.
Is this true?
Just reminded me of that.
We'll just watch that later. So with a bank, yes. A bank as your inspiration, ingredient.
Yes.
What are you having a moment?
We are having...
Okay.
We're having a paycheck.
A paycheck?
Yes.
I'll allow it.
I'm most kind.
I have no choice in the matter.
This is true.
Paycheck, you pay into the bank.
You do.
All right, it's a sidestep, isn't it?
All right.
I would have preferred bank to figure in the name, but I'm a forgiving woman.
So you almost had a safe word.
No, I would have shot you for that.
That's what I thought. I thought safe. I thought, oh.
Yeah,
no.
That's a bit like, so if you have to explain it, then no.
So that's why I didn't choose that.
Good.
And I thought, I'll go for a paycheck.
You don't get points for the stuff you didn't do.
You do.
A paycheck, okay. Well, you do go into the bank for that.
Yes, exactly.
We'll accept
this. Where
do
you put your money that you get paid? In the bank.
In the mattress, obviously. Where do you put? I mean, no, I put it in a guard dog. That's where I put my money. Robbers who are listening. Well, I think it is high time for us to sidle into the poisonous cabinet kitchen and shake up a storm. So we'll see you in a minute.
We'll see you in a bit.
And And we're back.
Yellow.
So, Nick.
Yes.
The paycheck.
Paycheck.
It's yellow.
Yes, it is.
This is very, very yellow, and very I'm afraid.
As am I.
Oh, really? Oh. See, I think when I see something this yellow, I think the dreaded chartreuse is in it. But if it is, you're usually going, ha, 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 doing a little happy dance. But now you look fearful.
I am slightly fearful.
Oh, wow. Okay, well...
intrigued and fearful at the same
time.
It's
a very clear yellow.
It is.
But, well, I'm afraid. I don't want to. I don't know. All right, well, let's smell it. Let's see if there's an aroma of me with my blocked nose. Okay, that smells of things.
It smells of things. Excellent. We're getting things.
What does that smell of?
There's some stuff.
There's some strong stuff in there. Is there absinthe in that?
We've got stuff and things. There is some absinthe.
Shit. Is it going to be an absinthe episode, people? You know what? Well, we'll see what happens. Yes. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Et votre santé? Bloody hell. Whoa, okay. There are many things happening there.
Many things happening in
there. I don't know if I like any of them, but I don't know if I dislike them. Mm. That's weird. Wow, all right. Ooh, sorry. Delayed reaction there. It's almost got a buttery aftertaste. Do you get that? Is this me?
I wouldn't say buttery.
There's a lot of herbally twiggy stuff going on. And then it sort of fades away.
Not sure I like that. In fact, I'm going to go out and say I don't like that.
I don't know whether it's my blocked nose or not. I don't love it. No, yeah. It's not. I'm not trying to find reasons to like this. Sorry. It has a really delayed reaction. It's got a lot of herbal stuff in there. It does have a buttery taste to it at points. I'm not going mad. But also... none of it seems to really work. My tongue is burning now. Why? What am I drinking? And you are drinking. Did you just give me drain cleaner?
Yeah, yours is a bleach.
And it's buttery. Buttery aftertaste. There you are.
So give me some guesses. Okay, you've got some thoughts.
Is there yellow chartreuse in this? Oh, thank God. Oh, thank the good Lord. But there's something twiggy.
Yeah.
All right. So I'll go through the twigginess. Benedictine?
Nope.
What else is twiggy? Some sort of Amaro?
Nope.
Or another vermouth or something?
There is a vermouth in there.
Oh, a dry vermouth?
There is a dry vermouth in there.
Oh, okay.
I don't think that's causing the twigginess you're getting.
No. I don't know. It's an unfamiliar twigginess.
You've had it before.
It's not overpowering, though. I don't know.
Soothe.
Oh, bloody bastard, buddy, Soothe.
Got some Soothe.
Always throwing it in there, and I never guess it.
And that's where you're yellow. That's where the yellow is coming
so the,
from.
So was
well.
That the gentian? Gentian. Yeah, okay, so that's the yellow.
Your bitter twang at the back.
How much else is in there? We got a spritz of absinthe.
Yeah, just a rinse of absinthe. So no, yeah. So there's a rinse of absinthe in there.
Okay.
So you've got two other things, three other things.
Triple sec.
Yes.
Nah, it's not just because you asked me earlier this week, Joe, do you have triple sec? No, I can get it.
There's a bit of an orange twang.
Florally orange. The others, honestly, I don't. Butter. Have you put butter in
there? There's actual butter in there.
It's got a fat wash.
No, some gin.
Oh, it's gin.
It's gin. I mean, the main spirit in there is gin. We have got Soothe, dry vermouth, Cointreau, and some honey syrup.
Oh, honey syrup.
Which sort of lightens the whole thing.
Does it?
It does mean that one of those things, the more I'm drinking it, actually, my palate is becoming acclimatized, and I'm now starting to enjoy it more than I did before. it's one of those things where it takes a while for your palate to get used to it, because it is such an alien.
If anyone's hearing weird noises, it's also my washing machine's coming, by the way.
It's actually growing on me.
It's like a weird first date, isn't it? With someone who's a good talker but not a looker. And you go, maybe they'll grow on me.
It's got all the ingredients of a white Negroni in there.
Well, yeah.
Gin, Soothe, and dry vermouth. Just with an added orange twang.
It's not undrinkable.
I probably will finish this one. Am I going to rush out and make another one?
No. It's the sort of thing that you'd be served at a wannabe fancy cocktail bar. And you'll get it and you'll go... I need to drink this because it costs
£12.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and you'd be going, oh, the flavours.
So many flavours.
The flavours. I'm not blown away by that, but it's not awful.
It's not awful, but...
I kind of want people to mix it up because buttery twang.
I don't know where you're getting this buttery twang from. I really don't.
Refined palate, mate. Refined palate. Also, I really like butter. And I
are all your glassware just lined with butter?
Yeah, because I like to drink a nice glass of butter every morning. And I'd like not to be judged for it.
No judgment. No judgment here. Concern, but no judgment.
Whatever it is, it's made my nose run, so that's good. It's clearing up my sinuses. Does it have much of an aftertaste for you?
Only you get the bitterness at the back from the sous, but once that's faded, then
it sort of goes falls off a cliff.
Yeah, just then I'm losing it.
It's fine.
It's fine. But will I have another one? No.
Yeah. Which is a shame, really. I hate it when we get kind of meh cocktails.
No, I love it or I hate it. This is just that meh.
This is just kind of, it's fine. You could drink it, which is not what you really want in a cocktail.
Not really.
Okay, well, I mean, sorry, people. There you go. There you go. The paycheck. Disappointing.
Yeah.
Promises so much.
Yeah.
Leaves a bitter aftertaste. Never what you thought it would be.
Sounds about right.
Robbed of its bonniness by the tax man, which I think we've had a tax man before, and it was a much better cocktail.
There we are.
The paycheck in hand, we're okay with it.
Yeah, we'll make do.
We don't have much of a choice.
This is also true.
Is it time for a story?
Ooh, yes.
Yay!
Yes. This week, we're going back to the Wild West.
Yay!
We're going back to the Wild West with the tale of one of the most famous outlaws that is.
Okay.
In fact, not one outlaw, but two outlaws.
Two famous outlaws.
Two
famous,
but certainly one is more famous than the other. Certainly the name of Jesse James has gone down in history as legend, really. Likely due to the nature of his very dramatic death.
Yes.
But his brother Frank was there from the beginning, side by side with Jesse throughout their bandit years. Mm. So this is the story of the James brothers.
Yay.
Frank and Jesse.
Oh, good. We love a tale from the Old West. Mm-hmm. We do love those great big plains.
Indeed. Now, the boy's parents, Robert and Zerelda. James Zerelda.
Zerelda?
Zerelda James.
That's a fantastic name.
Fantastic name. Mm. They're originally from Kentucky. The two met at a revival meeting, and after they married, and after Robert had finished his education at Georgetown College, the young couple moved to Missouri. They moved to the Centerville area of Clay County.
Okay. Missouri.
Lovely, lovely place. Very, very undeveloped. Acres of land everywhere. No one knows what's going on. So with the help of the very few neighbours there are...
They go, what's going on?
Robert and Zelda sort of lay claim to a bit of land and build a log cabin just in the middle of the wilderness. Right, it's ours now.
Fair enough.
This is our bit of land. And they begin to establish a farm for themselves. Not long after, though, Robert becomes the pastor of a small Baptist church in the area, preaching for miles and miles around. People will come to hear him sermonize. He was a well-liked and respected man in the community. Robert's reveranding all around the place left Z, as she was known, Zerelda, she was known commonly as Z, left her to manage the farm.
Okay.
And she is more than up to the task, really. She's over 6 foot tall.
What?
She's over 6 foot tall, and she is a hard-working, strong-willed, tough woman. She has no issue managing the farm, managing the workers. She keeps everything under her thumb. She is in charge.
It's just that she was tall. Maybe she was a delicate, lovely sort of woman.
I think she was entirely lovely, but she was tall, and there are some pictures of her, and she is quite like.
She was probably, I just want to sew and skip through the fields. No, you're a tall woman. We fear you.
You're a tall, exactly. Yes, you're scary. And tall.
You're scary. Scary. She's like, God damn it.
All other women at this point is like 4 foot. At this point in history, everyone's tiny, apart from this giant as a elder.
Okay, it's not the 1600s, Nick.
Stomping across the field.
With a pitchfork. Yeah. I have notes.
So she's having a grand old time.
Lovely.
Their first son, Alexander Franklin, so Frank James, he is born at on the family farm on the 10th of January, 1843.
Uh-huh.
Three more children quickly follow. You have Robert James Jr. He is born at the farm in 1845. He only lives for a month. He dies 33 days after he's born, unfortunately. Jesse Woodson James comes along in 1847.
Woodson?
Yep, middle name Woodson. Jesse Woodson James.
Okay.
And then finally, they have a daughter, Susan Lavinia James, who is born in 1849.
Good for her.
Now, in 1850, not long after the birth of their daughter, Reverend James, he is asked to serve as chaplain on a wagon train that's going to California. A lot of the local men struggling with farming, There's gold, and then there are hills over there. So they're off to make their fortune in the California gold rush. And they want the man of God to accompany them, to preach on the way and to keep them safe and all such things. So on the 12th of April, he leaves the farm in Z's care and he heads west to preach to the crowds of gold miners that are gathering in California. The minister, he never makes it back to Missouri.
Oh.
Unfortunately.
Oh, from death-related things?
From death-related things. So right. Shortly after arriving in California, they arrive at the beginning of August, 1850. So it's taken them about 3.5 months to get from Missouri to California.
You ever played the Oregon Trail?
And on the way, the Reverend has contracted fever from drinking contaminated water. Which, if he had played the Oregon Trail, he would have known not to do.
Literally, the Oregon Trail, sort of brace yourself in the wagon going, do nothing. Nothing. Maybe we'll survive this.
Yeah, but they
got there and then was shot through the eye.
Yeah. So unfortunately, on the 18th of August, 1850, the minister dies of cholera.
At
Placerville Gold Camp in California. He is buried in an unmarked grave in the camp. Years later, Jesse would visit Placerville to try and track down his father's grave, to find his remains. But there is no one left from the original party who knows where he's buried or anything. And unfortunately, he goes away not knowing his father's final resting place. He's forced to give up the search. After the Reverend's death, Zerelda, she inherits the farm and she continues to own the farm and actually till her death many, many, many years later. But now she is a widow with three very young children. Frank, who's the oldest one, he's 7 when his father dies. So, she is left with a lot of responsibility.
Her height can only do so much.
Exactly. Now, Zerelda marries a second time to a man named Benjamin Sims. Now, Sims is a neighbouring farmer, so he's known to James.
He was getting in there, wasn't he?
He's got in there.
Been creeping over to the fence with a bunch of flowers as soon as the Reverend went off, like, oh, Z, hello.
Hello.
Yes, you look like you can get things off a top shelf.
This marriage proved to be a rather unhappy marriage. Sims, he has no interest in raising another man's children, really. He has no interest in the boys. He is a bit too fond of corporal punishment.
What?
For Zelda's liking.
Why has he come onto the scene anyway? Has he got a goddess fetish or something?
I think he's got a land fetish.
Oh, right. Okay.
So they own a decent
vast
chunk of land.
Amount of land.
With a good going farm.
Yeah.
And he's got the next door small holding that's probably like half the size. He's going, if I marry in there, then all that's mine too. He then sort of takes control of this much larger establishment.
Makes sense.
So that's why he's in there. But he is not fond of the kids at all. He's a bit too ready with his fists. Not on Zerelda, but on the kids, on the two boys. He is more than happy to dish out a beating if they do the slightest thing wrong. Now, Zerelda, she isn't having none of that. No one lays a hand on her kids whatsoever.
Good for her.
Absolutely. And these causes huge arguments between the two. And she actually starts procedures for a divorce. She starts trying to go for
Good
a divorce,
for
which is incredibly rare in this day and age for a woman to try and get a divorce from a man is practically unheard of. But she knows, no, I'm not doing this. I'm protecting my family. She's going for it. It turns out to be entirely unnecessary. Sims is killed in a horse accident on the 2nd of January, 1854.
What sort of horse accident?
Well, we don't know. The reports I read don't go into detail. Perhaps he was thrown from a horse.
Like a car accident, but with horses.
Yes.
Head-on collision.
Head-on collision with a horse. The horse ate him. I don't know. Horses weren't happy with how the farm was being run. They rebelled. They formed
Shot
a gang.
Him. That's what you have to worry about with horses the day that they turn.
Exactly. They're always plotting, always plotting. So Sims is out of the picture now. A third marriage follows to a Dr. Archie Reuben Samuel. Mm-hmm. This is 1855, so just a year later. Now, the doctor, he is much more a sedate fellow. Yeah. He is more than happy for his wife to run the farm, to deal with the family. He's got a medical practice that he's running, and he's making good money from that. Mm-hmm. So with his income from that, he's able to buy more land surrounding the farm and expand the family's holdings, along with money to purchase more slaves that can run the farm and man the farm.
Okay.
As is the style of the time. By this time, the eldest son, Frank, he's around 12. He is described as a bit of a bookworm, really. Loves his father's library. But a lot of them are religious texts. But reportedly, he has a great fondness for Shakespeare as Yay. Well, that his father has in the library. And he wants to be a school teacher. When he grows up, he wants to be a school teacher. The younger son, Jesse, on the other hand, is quite the opposite from yeah. his older brother. He is outgoing. He loves the outdoors. He's a bit of a cheeky, chappy, rascally young lad, getting into all sort of hijinks and japes.
Running. Oh, I love the way he's at. Hijinks and japes.
All the fun things. So Dr. Samuel teaches both boys how to ride a horse, how to shoot, all the things that they would need to be. Need to be a man in the West type right. thing and to run a farm and all that sort of stuff.
He's running, there, jumping, he's, climbing
he's
trees.
He's not afraid of teaching and being a father to these young boys.
Which is what they need.
Which is what they need.
A steady
absolutely.
Male influence.
Yeah, and both boys, they work on their farm throughout the teenage years and they enjoy a perfectly normal, lovely, lovely life.
Lovely, lovely.
Lovely, lovely life. This idyllic scene.
Oh, God.
All comes crashing down in 1861.
The horse gangs.
The horse have rebelled, finally. No, we have the start of the American Civil War.
Oh, that's much worse. Oh,
that's much worse.
So there were horses in that, but I don't think they were controlling it.
I don't think they were in charge at the time. Not at the beginning, anyway.
Well, you know, debatable.
So 1861, American Civil War starts. Missouri has voted against seceding from the Union. But the state quickly finds itself sort of split apart, really.
Okay.
The majority of the state's settlers are from the South, so have very Confederacy leanings.
Yeah. All that.
But the state's economy is entirely reliant on the North. So the people with the businesses and the money, they are looking to the North for their advancement. The everyday people are looking to the South. The state really is split in two. And actually, two governments are formed within Missouri. One with looking to the South and one looking to the North, both vying for power. So you've almost got a civil war within a civil war. The James family, however, they are thoroughly Southern. They are entirely Southern. And Frank, who has just turned 18 now, joins up with the Missouri State Guard. They fight for the Confederacy. And we know that Frank fought in the Battle of Lexington, which was a huge Confederate victory. And Frank was there in the thick of it. Now, I'm not going to go into the James's brothers' activities during the Civil War. There were a lot of things. There's a huge amount of detail on what they did, and they were both. Jesse got involved as well when he got a bit older. There were questionable tactics used by both sides. Uh-huh. So, yeah, we're going to leave that to them, and we'll move to the end of the war.
Let's get to the outlawing.
Exactly.
The history of the war.
history of the war and the terrible things that happened during the war is not necessarily for us.
We know they happened.
Both sides did terrible things. So we're going to move on. We're going to meet Jesse again at the age of 17. Now, we're coming right to the very, very end of the war. Jesse's actually shot while trying to surrender. His unit has run into a Union cavalry patrol near Lexington. He is trying to surrender, but he is shot in the chest. He survives, obviously.
Didn't surrender well.
Yes, his flag was not big enough. And he is sent to recuperate at a boarding house that his uncle owns. While he is there, he is tended to by his cousin, Zerelda Mims. Now, cousin Zerelda had been named after Jesse's mother. So
right.
Jesse's mother and Zerelda's father are brother and sister, so
right,
they're first cousins.
Right.
This doesn't stop the pair forming quite an intimate relationship.
Oh.
And they actually begin a 9-year courtship.
Oh, right.
They are eventually married.
When you say 9-year courtship, why are you saying courtship?
Well, that's how it's described.
Oh, right.
That's how it's described.
They walk out together,
but they are married.
Posies, yes.
They are married 9 years later after their first sort of, I love you.
After their first I love you, after 9 years.
And then 9 years later, they're married. I think there's generally quite a lot of, it's your cousin.
Yeah, it's a bit. Because this is the first cousin, isn't it?
Yeah, first cousin. Yeah, yeah. So this is the first cousin.
By blood.
But it is overcome. And yeah, so many, many years later, they are in fact married. Jesse recovers from his wound. The war is now over. And Jesse and Frank find themselves at a bit of a loose end, really. Their units have been disbanded. Many of their friends have been killed in combat. Jesse and Frank are at a loss about what to do next, really. Mm. Even with the Union victorious in the end, the atmosphere is still incredibly volatile.
Yeah.
And there are still widespread sort of skirmishes between gangs of Southern supporters and Northern supporters, unwilling to accept the compromises that have been made and things.
Yeah.
There's still a lot of resentment, a lot of ill feeling around, and they get mixed up in a lot of that as well.
Yeah. Well, they would have lost, wouldn't they?
Exactly.
Yeah.
They
sort of feeling like, well, we don't belong in this world in this day and age.
Absolutely. I mean, it is reported that, so yes, the family had owned slaves on their farm. Their slaves were set free. But it's reported that they were actually very, as they were very good, apparently. And the slaves didn't want to leave. Not that they had anywhere else to go. They stayed there. So they were still very unhappy with how things had turned out.
Yeah.
The Jesse family were still, yeah, not at all happy with any of it.
I guess there are blurred lines in there. And I say blurred lines not at all about whether slavery is right or wrong. 100% it's wrong. But you have families probably who weren't utter bastards.
Exactly.
All the time. And this is someone's home. And it's, then are we turning you out? Mm. If you stay, though, are we going to get in trouble? And also a lot of people who are, you know, who fought for the South and kind of going, it's a world that I don't belong in anymore.
Exactly. This world is not for me. Jesse, he still wants to carry on the fight. He's still looking at a way to carry on.
Angry young
trying
man.
He's an angry young man, exactly what it is. He and his brothers join forces with other ex-Confederate fighters.
Oh, Jesse.
And they form a gang. You've got a chap who's called Archie Clement, who had been one of Jesse's commanders during the war. Mm-hmm. And then you have the younger brothers, four of them, Cole, John, Jim and Bob Younger. And they're in there as well. And they decide, right, no, okay, we're going to do something about this. We're going to fight back in our own little way. Their first target is the Clay County Savings Association Bank.
Yay!
In Liberty, Missouri. The bank is owned by an ex-Union militia officer. So they think, okay, this enemy officer from the other side, he now has moved into banking.
Right.
So this is going to be our sort of symbolic revenge. We're going to rob his bank. We're going to get him back. We've chosen this bank specifically for him. Also, oh, look, big piles of cash.
Yeah. How convenient. You fit the crime to the narrative, don't you?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So they're going, this is why we've chosen this bank, because it's owned by an ex-Union by Union soldiers. Also, oh, look, they've got the most money. Yeah.
Oh, we could just beat him up and we could just go, no, we need to go and take his cash because that will really hurt his feelings.
Exactly. So the robbery occurs on the 13th of February, 1866. It is noted as being the first peacetime daylight robbery in the United States.
Ooh, I like it.
Which is, yes,
in peacetime.
First peacetime robbery, yeah, absolutely. During the war, what the fuck you like?
Oh, everyone did everything, yeah.
Everyone robs everything.
Looting.
The gang make off with over $2,000 then, in cash and bonds. Huge amounts of money.
Holy shit.
A lot and lots of money. As they make their escape, gunfire erupts. The town sheriffs have been alerted. They've arrived at the bank. They're firing. The gang are firing back in the crossfire. Yep. An innocent 17-year-old boy, George Wymore, is killed.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, which doesn't go down too well.
Oh.
On December the 17th, 1869, gang holds up the Davis Country Savings Bank in Gallatin, in Missouri. They've got a hankering for banks.
Another Union bank?
Another Union bank, indeed. The bank teller here, a chap called John Sheets. Now, he apparently is a former Union officer who was said to be involved in the death of Bloody Bill Anderson.
Oh.
Now, he was a Confederate guerrilla leader. Jesse James served under him at some points during the war.
Oh, okay.
And right at the end of the war, he had been killed by Union soldiers. And this chap, who was now a bank teller, was apparently the one who shot him.
Ooh. Oh, yeah. I like it.
Now,
yeah,
Bloody
so
Bill
fair.
Has a huge... We could probably do a story just on him.
Because
he's very notorious, very vicious, but very effective guerrilla leader. But Jesse hates this chap. This chap who's killed his old commander, he's out for revenge against this man. He shoots the man through the back of the head. No which way about it. Out comes the pistol. Bang, he's dead. Another clerk in the building, a William McDowell, he runs for the door. He too is shot. But he survives. He survives his wounds and he is able to identify the James's brothers to the authorities.
Uh-huh.
It's definitely this man. As the gang make their escape, they are forced to fight their way out through a gathering mob. So the gunfire in the bank has sort of aroused local suspicion and a mob is forming outside and the gang are forced to fight their way out to get away, which they do.
Not really an effective mob, is it? We say mob, but more of a crowd.
More of a crowd. More of like three people going, oh, what's going on over there?
Yeah, yeah, eating some crisps. Yeah. Oh, it should look like fun.
So the gang have to fight their way out.
Oh, yeah, fight our way out. They just push an old man over. Like,
yeah, scare a horse and then it's like, fine. we're
don't
done.
Scare a horse. They're vicious. They will attack you.
But it is this robbery, it's the death of John Sheets that sort of catapults Jesse James into the public eye. This is where he becomes a newspaper-worthy figure. The papers run the story about how Jesse is taking revenge his old army captain. It's all really well spun. Right. The sort of southern papers are going, yes, this is a man who's still fighting for what he believes in,
yeah.
and all this sort of thing. His old commander was killed, and he's out there still fighting back, and all this sort of stuff.
Let's make him a folk hero, yes, for the south.
Exactly.
Who don't
exactly.
like the fact that they lost.
Then this growing public interest forces the Missouri governor, a chap called Thomas Crittenden, to announce a reward for his capture, $3,000, dead or alive, for this man to be brought in. The gang continue their spree, robbing banks, they rob stagecoaches, they even rob a fair in Kansas City. Right out in broad daylight, they rob this fair.
Nice.
Apparently sort of hamming it up for the crowd as well.
How?
Well, I think just being very flamboyant and very...
Firing into the air.
Exactly, they're not at all trying to hide it.
Song and dance routine.
So they're there holding up like the ticket booth of this fair type thing. But
make the money, run in and do the, you know, prettiest pig competition.
Really obvious what they're doing. And people are going, oh, it's just Jane, it's just Jane. Oh,
oh
just
my
Jane.
God, it's so Jane. Oh my God, we love you.
A picture, take a selfie. And all this sort of stuff. So
it's going to be quite compelling, isn't
it? Yeah, absolutely. Like, yeah. So the bystanders are there. They're not going, call the authorities. They're going, oh my God, it's him. It's him. How exciting. In 1873, things are getting more difficult in banks. Banks are realising that they're getting robbed.
They just realised. There was a board meeting with a lot of shuffling of papers. They went, right, people are robbing us all the time. What do we do? We have to do something? Oh, shit. Okay.
So it seems that technology is starting to evolve and things like time lock vaults and stuff start coming in. So it actually makes bank robbery quite a bit more difficult.
Yeah, you'd
at this
be safe
point,
cracker.
And when you're in to get into the 1870s, so they think, okay, that's not as quite as easy as it used to be. So now they're moving on to trains. We love a train robbery.
We do. We love a train robbery.
Great old train robbery.
Woohoo!
So in 1873, the 21st of July, they move to their first train robbery. They derail a locomotive just west of a town of Adair in Iowa. They completely derail the train. It comes off. They rob approximately $3,000 from the passengers and the baggage car, which is equivalent to about $75,000 today or so. So they a lot of money on that train.
There's a lot of money in trains.
A lot of money in trains.
I don't
absolutely.
Blame them.
Yeah. So they, but then in later robberies on trains, they seem to limit themselves to the baggage cars on trains. They don't necessarily go after the passengers anymore. They just go after the baggage cars. Which is fine. This sort of change in tact gives even more rise to their sort of folk hero status. So there's a particular journalist, a chap called John Newman Edwards, who makes sure to highlight this in all everything he writes. And he's able to create this sort of like Robin Hood sort of narrative around the gang.
Well,
so they're not stealing from people anymore. They're stealing from faceless corporations.
Ah, the corporations.
So the banks and the train companies and all that. They're not robbing passengers or people.
Yeah.
They're robbing nameless things, which really elevates them in the eyes of the people who are being held down by the man.
Yeah.
So people are going, oh, yay, it's money. There's no evidence they ever gave any of their money away to the poor or anything.
No. The big businesses need to be robbed. They never hurt us apart from the people who caught in the crossfire.
Yeah, exactly. But they have gone from outlaws into absolute folk heroes.
Yeah.
By this point. In 1874, Jesse James, he marries Zelda Mims.
Yay.
So we're now 9 years later after they've met, so they're now married.
Took them long enough. Yeah.
The wedding ceremony is performed by Jesse's uncle, Minister William James. Obviously, the family have come round to the idea.
Right. They're just looking and going, we don't like
this
at
like,
all.
Let's just get on with it. Let's just do it. The ceremony is held in Kansas City. A few months later, Frank marries Annie Ralston as well. So both brothers are now married.
Lovely.
And they do try and settle down for a while. Think, okay, no, we're married. We're going to have families. It's going to be good. We're going to go back to normal farming ways. Everything will be lovely. During this sort of like slight downtime, the gang is blamed for anything and everything that ever goes wrong. So the slightest, I lost my ring. Oh, the Jesse James
nicked it. Yeah. But then that's people just trying to, you know, make themselves sound fancy.
Absolutely. So,
I was robbed at gunpoint in my underwear, yes, by the Jesse James gang. Oh, well, they did this. No, they didn't.
No, they really didn't. They really, really didn't. But anything that happened in the West, it was their fault.
Ooh.
Now, Zerelda, who's back on the farm, the mother, back on the farm. She begins a bit of a public relations campaign. She is very much up this sort of like Robin Hood narrative.
Oh, I like
so
it.
She, so
okay.
She's there, still going, no, you're not going to say these horrible things about my boys.
Yeah.
And she's doing her own PR campaign.
Nice.
Sort of the other way, sort of upping their status as these folklore heroes, stealing from the rich and Maybe sometimes giving to the poor, probably not, but okay.
they're poor. They had to rob someone.
Yeah, they're giving to themselves. They're very poor.
Exactly.
I need a break. I'm talking so much.
Is it time for a drink? Talking.
It's time for a drink.
It's time for a drink.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
So Zerelda has her PR campaign out for her boys.
Absolutely. We're going to move on now to a part of the story we have actually covered before. But listen back to our Pinkertons episode.
The Pinkertons?
We did an episode on the Pinkertons. So we covered this bit in that.
Yes.
So we're going to recap slightly.
Okay.
What happened with the Pinkertons?
What happened with the Pinkertons?
1875, Alan Pinkerton, he's been on the trail of the gang for about 4 years now through various contracts he's been given by banks and train companies. And he has become increasingly infuriated by the agency's failure to even see a gang member, let alone arrest one, bring any to justice. They have been completely elusive.
Complete myths. They're like Bigfoot. Yeah,
and he is that right. No, fucking get him. Whatever happens, you fucking get him. In January of 1875, there's a Pinkerton agent called Jack Ladd. He is posing as a field hand working on the farm across the road from the James's farm where Zerelda still lives, thinking at some point they're going to come back and see their old mum.
Yeah.
And once they do, we've got him. It's going to be grand.
He's been working that farm for 5 years.
He's been working that farm for 5 years.
He's an expert. He's got beautiful carrots. Yes. And he's loath to leave his petunias.
He really is. He really is. One day, he sees who he thinks are the James's brother arrive at the farm.
Just anyone, probably. Yeah,
who knows who they were. He's convinced he's seen them at the farmhouse.
Aye.
And he alerts his colleagues. The next day, there are 6 Pinkerton agents surrounding the farmhouse, trying to capture the Jesse brothers. They toss an incendiary bomb into the farmhouse to try and force out the occupants.
That's a bit harsh.
Which is slightly harsh, absolutely. Yeah. Now, there are some reports that say it's actually a smoke bomb, which was designed to some of that. Other reports say, no, it's actually just a fucking bomb. So, don't know. Either way, there is an explosion in the house, which kills Archie Samuel.
Jesus.
Now, Archie Samuel is Jesse and Frank's younger brother, her half-brother, from Zerelda's third marriage. Yeah. So he's about 5 years old at this point. He is killed outright by this explosion. Zerelda, who has tried to protect her son, her arm is blown off. She loses an arm in this explosion. The agents quickly realise that the James's brother are nowhere near they are not in the house at all. It's just mother and young son, one of whom they've maimed, the other they have blown to pieces.
So they've just completely screwed that up.
Completely screwed it up.
They thought they saw something.
Yep.
Was it two horses disguised as men?
God knows what it was. There was certainly no other people in the house. The agents, they quickly realise that the brothers are there, then they're nowhere there, and that they make a swift exit. They absolutely fucking leg it. Now, obviously, this news gets out. The public are outraged that this agency, these detectives, have done this horrendous thing, killed a child to try and get to these outlaws. There are many people in Missouri, and it comes down to a vote in the sort of the legislature of the state that many, many people want to give amnesty to the Jesse brothers, but almost by means of an apology to make amends for what has happened to their family. It doesn't pass by like two or three votes or something. It's really not. It's incredibly tight.
I mean, you can see all of this sort of like being laid out, because he really is now coming out as a Robin Hood figure, he and his brother.
Absolutely.
Because, he's been taking his revenge and doing terrible things, you know. However, now you've just got his family maimed and murdered.
You just killed his brother.
Yeah.
And blew off his mother's arm.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
And everyone's like, he's not robbing from us. He's just robbing from the corporations. Let's look after him. Let's celebrate him. Yeah. Oh, I'm seeing where the folklore comes from now.
So a lot of people are on his side going, how dare these bastards do this to one of our own. And so the public are not the only ones who are angry. The James brothers are fucking furious about all of this.
You would think.
And in 1875, Dan Askew, now he's the neighbour who owned the farm where the undercover agent was stationed.
Yeah.
He is found with a bullet in his brain. This man, obviously knowing that he had
harboured
this person. Jack Ladd, later the same month, Jack Ladd himself was found dead. The brothers and their families, they moved around for a while, always keeping one step ahead of the authorities. They pulled off various heists as and when they needed to get a bit more money. 2 days after Jesse's 29th birthday in 1876, the James gang attempt to rob the First National Bank of Northfield in Minnesota.
Ooh, the First National Bank.
The First National Bank.
It's a big one.
The robbery was to be the beginning of the end, really, of the infamous gang. When the bank cashier is ordered to open the safe, he refuses. Not going to happen. I'm not going to do it. Jesse pulls his pistol, puts it to his head, asks again, open the fucking safe. The cashier again refuses to open the safe.
That's a brave cashier.
Jesse shoots him dead.
Okay.
Jesse shoots him outright, shoots him dead. This shot is heard beyond the bank. This gunshot is heard, and the bank alarm starts to go off. Someone triggers the bank alarm. Everyone now rushes to the bank outside. All the citizens who hear this alarm, they rush to the bank knowing something is wrong.
Lord.
And as soon as the gang emerge, they have got an armed posse against them, and the citizens all open fire. They've got all their guns there. They're, fuck it, we're going to take them down.
I liked the idea that someone just sort of tipped their head around the door frame and just a hail of bullets.
Just a hail of bullets, absolutely.
Like, yeah, we may need a backup plan.
Yeah, indeed. They just let rip with everything they've got.
One guy not with a gun, just throwing pots and pans and chickens. And
another one just shouting a lot. Bang, bang, bang.
You filthy beasts.
So two gang members, Charlie Pitts and Bill Chadwell, they're killed outright. Mm. Cole, Jim and Bob Younger, and there were some of the younger brothers, they are all badly wounded, but they managed to escape.
Ooh.
They're captured less than a week later. They are captured and all sentenced to life terms in prison. Frank and Jesse escape.
Of course they do.
They manage to get out and they get back to Missouri unharmed. Let's try this again, they say. Well, they're not deterred.
What?
They lost half their gang. Out of the four younger brothers, three of them are now life in prison. Two of the other gang members are dead.
They're going to try it again.
But the brothers are there. Oh, we need money. We need money.
Pride.
We need to carry on with this. Absolutely.
I mean, it could be a stroke of genius where you go, they're not going to suspect we'll hit the same place twice.
Oh, no, sorry. I beg your pardon. They don't hit the same place twice.
Oh, sorry. I was thinking they were idiots. But, you know.
they're not going for the same place again, but they need to continue robbing banks, carrying a heist. They need to continue this life of crime.
Fine. That's fine. Yeah, ignore what I said about the genius plan because it was stupid.
So they recruit a few new gang members and the robberies continues. And they continue for another couple of years.
Fair enough.
They hold up a stagecoach is near Mammoth Cave in Kentucky. Yeah. They rob banks in Alabama. There's another train robbery in Missouri. Having a grand old time. Shortly after the gang's last train robbery in Glendale, Missouri, which is in 1881.
Yes.
Jesse, who has now got two children with Z, he moves the family to St. Joseph in Missouri. And they start renting a very nice house under the name Tom Howard.
Okay.
He's not Jesse James there, he's Tom Howard.
Lovely.
There is now a $10,000 reward on his head. Huge amount of money. Z is desperate for Jesse to give up this life. They've got a young family. We just need your home, sort of looking after the family, get an honest job.
We don't need all these riches or anything.
And all that. We just come home.
Just sell down. I mean, yeah.
Jesse says, yes, fine, okay, I'll do it. One last job, and we'll be set for life. There's one last job, one big score, and I can finally retire. And I'll be home with you and the kids, and it'll be marvellous.
She must be saying, okay, I know movies haven't been invented. Sort of, there's early bits. Yeah. Have you ever read a book?
Yeah.
Have you ever read a novel?
Yeah.
One last heist. No one ever says three last heists.
This will be my penultimate heist.
Seven last heists and then we're fine.
Yeah.
And then I'm there. You know what? I'll carry on until about lunchtime.
for the last one, for the final robbery of his career, he has partnering up with Bob and Charles Ford. Now, Jesse has worked with them in the past and the Ford brothers.
Right.
Sorry,
right. The whole time you've been telling this story, I've been trying to remember the full name of the film.
There you go.
Carry on.
Yeah. The Ford brothers visit Jesse in his home in St. Joseph on the morning of the 3rd of April, 1882. They are there to plan the robbery, plan the heist. They sit in the parlour. Jesse outlines his grand plan for the robbery, the one last big robbery that will set them all for life.
Absolutely.
At some point, for some reason, Jesse notices that a picture on the wall is slightly crooked. There's a picture that his mother has done that's on the wall, and it's on the wonk. So
it's on the wonk? What the fuck was that?
The picture's on the wonk.
Is that an expression?
Well, it is what I say it.
On the wonk. It's wonky.
It's wonky. It's on the wonk.
It's on the wonk. A, that's a weird thing for him to be pointing out, but it's not completely straight.
He's just sitting there with their blueprints or whatever.
Just twitching.
And there's a picture in the corner. It's a bit like...
Yeah, he says it's on the wonk, and everyone goes, what the fuck is that as a sentence? You mad bastard, you.
The picture,
kill him, he's weird.
The picture is slightly crooked.
There you go. Bloody hell.
And he goes to straighten up this picture on the wall.
Right, okay.
As his back is turned, he hears a pistol cocking. Bob Ford shoots Jesse just below the right ear. Kills him instantly. Jesse falls to the floor.
The coward Robert Ford.
Now, the sound of this gunshot, Z runs into the room, finds her husband dead on the floor. Bob has legged it. Robert has actually legged it out of the room. Charles, the brother, is left there going, the gun went off accidentally. It was entirely accidental. The gun just went off in his hand. And then
brutally accidentally shot the guy in the back of the head.
Then goes, bye now, and legs it after his brother. Now, I read a couple of articles. I don't know if Charles was in on this. The brother was in on this.
Did Robert just do it?
Or if Robert did it on his own recognizance, if it was just his thing, or if the brother was in on it as well. I don't actually know that. So someone maybe had to enlighten me on that.
Wow.
So yes, Jesse James is dead. He's 34 years old. He's done quite a lot with his life.
he's done well, in inverted commas.
He's become a legend.
Yes.
And he's 34. It turns out that weeks earlier, Bob Ford had been arrested for killing another man, a chap called Wood Height. Wood, first name, Height, surname.
It's a very good name.
Very good name.
Also, was it a man?
I believe it was.
Was it just a pile of woods?
Or it could have been a tree. I don't know.
Yeah.
He shot a tree.
And he said, what's his name? It's Wood Height.
Yeah.
The third.
So he is arrested for killing the tree. And during questioning, it is revealed that he knows the James brothers. He knows Jesse. He knows Frank. He's in tight with
them. He's giving up everyone that he knows, isn't he?
He strikes a deal with the state governor, Thomas Crittenden. Bob will kill Jesse James in exchange for a pardon for the Height murder. And also for the $10,000 reward.
Of course he will.
And the governor agrees.
I mean...
The governor says, yeah, you kill this man who we have been after for years and years and years.
Yeah.
I will pardon you for the murder and you'll get your reward. After his death, Jesse James is packed on ice and he's taken to Kearney, where he is displayed. He's sort of propped up.
Really?
And people come from miles and miles and miles around to view the legend that is Jesse James. There's friends, there's admirers.
Okay.
There's enemies. Everyone comes to see him dead.
Well, so my recollection is that that would happen with outlaws quite regularly-ish. It was a thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Prop up the body. Not like Lenin. You know, it's not been embalmed. It's going to look not great after a while.
No, indeed, yeah.
But is that more of the state or the authorities going, here, look at this awful criminal?
Yeah, I think a lot of that is part of the state going, right, we've caught him.
We've caught him.
We've got Jesse James.
But then people would be coming to see the legend who were on his side and absolutely. Go, oh, Jesse James, have a flower and have a...
People
pay their respects.
Pay their respects.
And others to throw tomatoes.
all that sort of stuff. He is buried on the family farm in a plot very near the house that Zerelda is still owning. She is there. She can keep an eye out, she says, for trespassers. I mean,
she's tall enough. Customers.
She's tall enough. She's now only got one arm.
But now she's grown 7 foot to compensate.
She's there, fiercely protective still of her son. His tombstone reads, "In loving memory of my beloved son, murdered by a traitor and coward whose name is not worthy to appear here."
Oh, that's a good epitaph.
That's a
good tombstone.
Absolutely. Isn't it? Initially, Robert Ford is charged with murdering both Woodhight and Jesse James. But true to his word, Governor comes forward and he pardons him for both crimes. Doesn't quite get the reward he's promised, though.
Oh, fuck.
But he gets his pardon. Both Bob and Charles, they return to their hometown of Richmond. They're not popular.
No,
they're not particularly warmly welcomed.
Ooh, this backfired.
Locals quite pissed off with them. Yeah, they find the killing of Jesse James quite objectionable. And they make life unbearable for the brothers, really, in Richmond. They are not having them in their hometown. Charles Ford, he flees from Richmond. He hears that Frank James is on the warpath after revenge for his brother. And he absolutely legs it. And he runs from town to town to town to town to town. He's on the run for about 2 years, changing his names, going around the place. He finally commits suicide in 1884.
Wow.
For fear. Now, he's not the one who pulled the trigger.
No, he was there. He could have stopped them.
He was there.
The name.
He's... Again, do we know if he was in? He was complicit in the whole thing?
He's forever known.
But he's forever known as his brother's partner, the killer. Yeah, the brother of the killer. So, yeah, he eventually kills himself. Through either fear of being caught or guilt, potentially, I'm not sure. But yeah, he commits suicide in 1884.
Wouldn't it be funny? Well, not funny. It's the wrong way to say it. It'd be interesting if he was on the run for ages and no one was chasing him.
Yeah.
No one was chasing him. He was like, I am the brother of the man who killed Jesse James. Well, did you kill him? No. Well, we don't fucking care, you know, quite frankly. Like, no.
Yeah, I mean, what's interesting is that Robert Ford, on the other hand, he looks to make the most out of his...
Well, he may as well lean into
Absolutely. He really leans into it, as you say. And he takes the stage in an act called Outlaws of Missouri.
Come on now.
Each night, night after night after night, he is on stage and he retells his story of taking down Jesse James.
I mean, if you're going to do it, then why not?
Absolutely. I mean, he carefully sort of omits the fact that he shot him in the back. Or shot him from behind.
Cowardly.
But each night, the crowd is there booing, heckling, chucking stuff.
But they're paid.
I don't know if he's in a theatre or if it's in like a various inns and stuff like that or taverns. He's sort of like on a little stage. I don't know if he's getting paid for this. I don't know.
I don't think he'd probably put himself out there for free going, take a shot.
Maybe not,
kids.
But everyone is taking a shot. Everyone is jeering and heckling and shouting.
They haven't shot him, though, have they?
Well, no, exactly. No one has shot him.
He's made himself a public figure for hate.
Yeah. He eventually takes himself off to Las Vegas. He has his show there. He ends up in New Mexico. He ends up settling down in Colorado, where eventually he is shot.
Yeah.
He is shot down in his own saloon in 1892.
That's a long time.
Like, Charles was obviously convinced that Frank was after him. People were after him.
Yeah.
Robert was like, I'm here. His name is on posters and lights. So we are Robert Ford, killer of Jesse James. I'm right here. So
he must have had protection. He's obviously not
that afraid of retribution.
No, because there would be plenty of people who were not fans of Jesse James.
Yeah.
Who thought he had done a brilliant job, and he must have hired bodyguards. He must have been protected to a point, and played into it so much more. Like hard right, kind of like I'm thinking like really, really hard kind of right leaning. I go, oh, well, I'm untouchable. Yeah. And then you're like, oh, actually, yeah, no, maybe people believed him.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Until he washed up in his own saloon.
Yeah.
So until someone had enough.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Now, during their 15-year crime spree, the James gang committed 26 holdups. Bank mixture of bank robberies, stagecoach robberies, train robberies, and they made off with more than $200,000. $200,000, 1800s.
Yeah,
millions upon millions today. They also killed at least 17 men.
Yeah, yeah. Killed a lot of people. Who
killed
had
a lot of people?
Probably families. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. Frank James eventually grew tired of his life on the run and his life in hiding. On the 4th of October 1882, he marches into the governor's office in Missouri, takes off his gun belt and throws it on the desk, saying, Governor Crittenden, I want to hand over to you that which no living man except myself has been permitted to touch since 1861.
What?
Sorry. His guns.
Right. The governor's like... It's what? Probably halfway through and just
who
went, who's not been able to touch what? What have they not been able to... The guns. No, guns. We all have guns.
Yeah.
What? Who are you, yeah, who by are the way? Start with that, mate. Start with that. I'm Frank James. Who's that? That's a very common name. Right? You know who Jesse James is? Who? Oh, God, get someone else in here who knows what the fuck has been going on. Right, I'll put them back on. I'll come back in again. I'll do it again. Assembled a bunch of people who are like, what's going on?
Frank is arrested.
Right, for time wasting.
Eventually someone knows, oh yes, you're Frank James.
Oh,
you're a naughty man. So they arrest him.
I like how camp that person who was. He was arresting him. You're naughty, naughty you're boy. You're a naughty boy. I'll put you in shackles, I will.
He is acquitted on all counts.
Right.
Out to trial.
Okay.
He is acquitted and he returns home to the James's farm.
How is he acquitted? Sorry. Well, he's killed many people.
Public sympathy, people think. A lot of it is the people are still rooting for the James brothers. Especially as his brother has been killed in such a horrendous, cowardly way.
But They were robbers. They killed people. They were outlaws.
They took people's life savings. They were outlaws.
But people
loved them for it.
People whose life savings were taken away, blaming the corporations, going, no, the James brothers got them. They'll deliver it. And then going 20 years later, any day now. They probably let Frank off because they were like, no, he has all our fucking money. We're really hoping he'll call by.
Yeah. So, Frank is acquitted on all counts.
Wow.
So, yeah, he returns home. He works as a horse trader. And trader and trainer on the family farm. Jesse's mother, Zerelda, she allows tourists to view her son's grave. 25 cents a view.
Good girl.
And she gives paid tours of the farm as well. Like where the bomb came in, where she was when her arm got blew
Definitely
off.
Definitely do
people
that.
People are paying to see this stuff.
Dark tourism.
People, yeah, exactly. People
it's
think
her
it's a new
son.
Thing.
She can do what the bloody hell she
Absolutely
likes.
Absolutely she can. Absolutely she can. Now, Jess's wife, Z, she goes into a deep depression after her husband is killed. And she sees her husband killed. And she dies in 1900. And she's buried next to her husband.
Aye.
Zerelda dies at the age of 86 in 1911. She's had a good old innings, that woman, and she is still there at the end defending her family farm.
With the biggest grave in the whole of the world.
That's followed a few years later in 1915 by Frank, the last of the James brothers.
Wow.
There we go, that's the story of the James brothers, Jesse and Frank. Fantastic outlaws.
Absolutely brilliant. Yay! Ooh, a good old tale from the Wild West and the James Brothers. Knew nothing about the James Brothers. Honestly, I didn't think I was lying there. So, honestly, Gav, I didn't.
I didn't promise.
I didn't. Great story. Yeah. Oh, there's a lot to think about there at the end. I suppose it's all the like, which morally, which side do you land on? You don't have to land on any side here.
They got away with a lot of shit.
Well, they did. And I guess it's that Robin Hood thing. Oh, yeah, they're just robbing the corporations. Maybe they thought that was the right thing to do, but they still did kill people.
They still kill people. Yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, they killed people who were working for the man. That's still murder.
Kill people who work for the banks and stuff like that. Just a bank teller and a bank clerk and stuff like that.
Yeah.
They're not the man.
Yeah. They're not the man. Yeah, they're not robbing and killing innocent people in their homes. And obviously people kind of want to go, yeah, let's celebrate them.
A lot of it was from the backlash from the whole Pinkerton thing. Thinking this is how authorities behave.
That I can understand. It only takes one thing.
Absolutely.
It only takes one thing.
This is how the man behaves. This is how the government behaves. This is how the authorities behave in this atrocious way.
Yeah.
Therefore, why the hell shouldn't we stick up for these people who are from here, who have worked hard, who have defended this state and what have you.
But how easy it is to change the narrative on that. Ooh, yes. What side do you land on there of Jesse James and his brother?
They were criminals. I mean, they killed people.
Yeah.
So there's no excusing that. And it wasn't in self-defense and it wasn't in... At these points, it was not in a time of conflict or anything like that. They just know, I want your stuff. Give me your stuff. I'm going to blow your brains out if you don't give it to me.
Yeah. I've decided which side we land on.
So that, no. I understand why some people are sympathetic, but still, no. Just no.
How much of the sympathy, I suppose, is this a thread not to tug on, or maybe it's too big a question, but the fact that they were on the side of the South?
Oh, I think a huge amount of it was from, because they were local heroes. They had fought for their, what they believed in, and they had fought for their state. Absolutely, they were. They were local heroes who could do no wrong, potentially.
Yeah, apart from maybe supporting abolishing slavery, maybe. You know, what their stance on that, we don't know. What we probably do,
I think we do.
Well, what do you think, people? What do you think and know of the story of Jesse James and his brothers, about the James brothers? What do you think of this story? What do you know about them? What side do you land on? Do you think they are folk heroes? Have you read things about them being folk heroes and absolutely celebrated? Do you know people who still celebrate them? Or do you land on the other side? Maybe it's not black and white completely. Do you land in the grey area? Tell us what you think. Jump on the comments of this episode. Tell us your thoughts, your theory. Share more stories about them and more legends and more tales that maybe your ancestors or members of your family would have spoken about, because our listeners definitely in America will have some story somewhere where someone owned a belt buckle that was owned by Jesse James, because we all do. But most importantly, well, sort of maybe.
Maybe-ish.
When you're musing this, if you have the ingredients, you might want to mix up a paycheck.
Yeah, if you've got the stuff, give it a go. If you haven't, don't go and buy it especially.
No.
I would say.
This is not the one.
We've both finished ours.
Aye.
So.
Not as quickly as I thought we would.
No. But so
literally on the last sip of this last few seconds,
it wasn't particularly inspiring.
No, but we'd like to know what you think. If you have the ingredients and you've got some spare, you don't mind,
give it a go.
Mix it up and tell us what you think. Is it buttery?
Is it? Yeah, it's really not.
Does it have a buttery biscuit base? It's. I'm selling it too well, because butter in anything I would drink. Mix one up. If you don't mix it up, please tag us in any photos of cocktails you are enjoying this weekend, whether they are at home or in bars, or send us more suggestions of cocktails recipes that we can be mixing up. And also, now we are into October, what can we be doing for spooky season? We tend to go a little bit spookier this month. We always cover crime, but can we cover more spooky related crime? We would love your suggestions of a big episode that we can do in time with Halloween, but also other little things that we can do on Patreon to absolutely embrace spooky season. If you haven't already, consider joining us on Patreon, and please leave us a 5-star review on Apple iTunes if you think we're worth it, which we definitely are.
Of course.
Thanks for listening, guys. We have been the people inside the Poisoner's Cabinet. We will see you next week. And remember, your loved ones are trying to kill you.
Bye. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.